We are now going to switch gears, and I'd like to ask our program coordinator, Anthony Wong, to come up. As many of you know, we recently lost a very important member of our community, distinguished Professor Peter Kwong. There were some memorial services for him, and I know that many of you had wanted to attend but were unable to do so because of scheduling and so forth. So we wanted to honor him in our own way, from the perspective of friends, from the perspective of folks who have had him as a mentor, from the perspective of Peter as a community leader, somebody that's played a really important role in the lives of many. So I'd like to ask Anthony Wong to lead this session.
Before we get to our panelists that we've invited here today, we have actually a special guest here, Executive Vice Chancellor and University Provost, Dr. Vita C. Rabinowitz, here from the City University of New York, to bring special remarks about Professor Kwong, whom she worked many years with at Hunter College, where she served as provost there as well.
Good afternoon, colleagues. I want to thank Joyce for inviting me to speak about someone I cared about very much, and it is good to be here with you today to remember Peter. I came to know Peter Kwong during the time that I was the provost at Hunter College between the years 2005 and 2015. But I did not know him. I did not see him clearly for what he was.
He was nominated with great enthusiasm by his department chair, still the department chair of Urban Affairs and Planning at Hunter, Joseph Vittery, nominated for CUNY Distinguished Professor in 2011. I, as provost, needed to prepare Peter's dossier for that promotion. That set me on the task of learning about this man, whom I had known by reputation, and I had met in consultations about the Asian American Studies program at Hunter College, which Peter once headed, and of which he was always the intellectual North Star. I learned something about Peter, who he was, what he did, what he meant to scholarship, to journalism, to documentary filmmaking, to public service, activism, and indeed the history of social justice in the United States and in China. At first, I did not know what to do with the early returns on Peter's portfolio. And when I described it to the Office of Academic Affairs, the office that I now head, they didn't know either. It was suggested that this was going to be a tough case to make because Peter was all over the place. How would he be evaluated as a public intellectual? Peter was interdisciplinary and intersectional before those words were fashionable. He held degrees in math and physics and studied engineering before earning a doctorate in political science from Columbia University. He was at once a member of the Department of Urban Affairs and Planning at Hunter College, director of the Asian American Studies program at Hunter, and professor of sociology at the Graduate Center. Over the years, he held visiting professorships in political science, history, economics, international politics, American studies, Asian studies, ethnic studies, and urban planning. Who was this man? But he held these professorships at places like Yale, Princeton, Columbia, Berkeley, UCLA, Oberlin, and three top universities in China. So preparing the dossier was not easy because Peter Kwong was not just this or just that. Finding reviewers and an examining committee was also a challenge. in part because Peter showed little interest in promoting himself and had little flair for self-presentation or self-aggrandizement. I had to beg him to redo his CV to highlight his remarkable achievements that were utterly lost in the CV that he had given me. But in the end, promoting Peter Kwong was a process of discovery and a labor of love. We found 35 reviewers to examine his portfolio, almost three times the number of reviewers required. And this is what I learned. Peter Kwong had a stunning national and international reputation as a scholar, as a journalist, as a filmmaker, as an advocate and activist, and as a teacher, all of which together made him a leading public intellectual of his time. At that time, he had published 8 books and written 19 book chapters, 10 chapters in encyclopedias or readers, 24 articles or book reviews in refereed journals, and over 70 articles in mass media. He was directly involved in the production of 21 documentary films. This scholarly and creative work was tied to a remarkable record of public service and advocacy, which continued until the day he died, which in no way diminished, but only enhanced his scholarly achievements, and all of which reflect a passionate and committed man. He was committed to social justice on behalf of oppressed and disadvantaged people across the globe, especially but not exclusively focused on immigrants, especially but not exclusively focused on Chinese American immigrants. Peter Kwong's book, Chinese America, The Untold Story of America's Oldest New Community, written with his wife and lifelong collaborator, Dusanka Nishidi, received the Distinguished Service Award for outstanding written work by the Shanghai Tiffin Club. His book, Forbidden Workers, Chinese Illegal Immigration, Immigrants and American Labor, was chosen by Barnes & Noble as one of the 10 best nonfiction books of the year. His article, The First Multicultural Riots, was nominated by the Village Voice for a Pulitzer Prize, one of two for which he would be nominated. His film, China's Unnatural Disaster, concerning the Chinese government's tragic mishandling of the 2009 earthquake in which many school children perished, was nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Documentary Film category in 2010. One of his reviewers wrote the following, and I quote, "While the rest of the scholarly world celebrated the successful assimilation of Chinese Americans as the model community, he, Peter Kwong, was painstakingly documenting the seamy side of American democracy and the reality of how the other half of Chinese Americans lived under the weight of globalization and the stigma of undocumented status. Prior to the publication of his book in 1979, no historian or social scientist recognized the importance of class in Chinatown. His seminal study of working class struggles, represented by Chinese laundrymen and seamen in the 1930s and 1940s, laid the foundation for future scholarship. Another major contribution is his long-standing insistence that Chinese Americans cannot be understood adequately in fully without examining their relations to China. Those in the know portray Peter as the most nuanced and authoritative voice on Chinese American history and the history of Chinatown. A history of exclusion and injustice, of multidimensional actors past and present with names and minds and wills and voices. the same time that Peter was establishing himself as a scholar of the first rank, he was also a journalist of the first rank. He was a syndicated columnist, a contributing writer to major publications, and the associate editor of the Village Voice. His articles, essays, and commentaries appeared in the New York Times, the International Herald Tribune, the Philadelphia Inquirer, The Nation, and foreign newspapers in Denmark, Italy, and South Africa, among other places. He regularly appeared on national television and radio and was constantly quoted in national and international print media. He was one of the first Asians to study and write on the controversial subject of conflict between African and Korean Americans. One of the articles he wrote after the Los Angeles riots in 1993 was nominated for his second Pulitzer Prize nomination. As with his scholarship, his journalism made people uncomfortable with its unflinching honesty and commitment to social justice. Peter was a great documentary filmmaker. In addition to having been nominated for an Academy Award in 2010 for co-producing China's Unnatural Disaster, several other of his documentary films have won prestigious awards, including an Emmy Award, the Grand Prize at the Tokyo Video Festival, and Best Documentary Film of the Year by the New York Times. Peter's commitment to social justice goes beyond his writing and his filmmaking. Peter was on the front lines, a leading figure across the nation and the globe as an activist against intra-ethnic exploitation, organized crime, drug and human trafficking, issues that tear at communities from within. He criticized the corrosive effects of money in politics and exposed Chinese business interests seeking to buy political influence in the United States and the important role that race and ethnicity still play in America. His search for truth and understanding put him in many dangerous and sometimes life-threatening situations. One of his reviewers describes how Peter waded into street battles and the Tiananmen Square confrontations, how secret police and local authorities on two subsequent trips to China detained him, but he never backed down even when threatened with violence or jail. At Hunter College, we knew Peter as a great teacher and mentor. His chair, Dr. Vitteritti, described Peter as one of the most esteemed, popular, demanding, and effective teachers in his department. The best evidence for this is the long-term impact he has had on students as mentors who have shaped careers, indeed, an entire generation of young academics. So, in closing, it will not surprise any of you in this audience to know that the political scientist, sociologist, urban affairs specialist, journalist, filmmaker, activist, and founder of Asian American Studies, Peter Kwong, was named CUNY Distinguished Professor in 2011. Since that time, Peter remained engaged and productive. He organized a Dalai Lama's meeting with the East Coast Chinese American scholars held at Hunter College. More recently, he launched the Mapping Project and was at work on two books, one with his lifelong love and collaborator, Dusanga Mishavit, and another, an autobiography that we will sorely miss. What a wonderfully brilliant, talented, and complex man, who was also modest, showy, kind, and generous. And how he loved CUNY. 2 days before he died, Peter was in my office, excitedly pitching ideas for strengthening and expanding intellectual community throughout the university. I will miss the chance to see and work with him on this, we all will. I am happy only that this astonishing intellect and creative force was a part of Hunter, a part of CUNY, but he remains a part of us. And he was as proud to be that as we are proud to claim him forever. Thank you, colleagues, for your time.
Thank you very much, Vice Chancellor. I'd like to recognize the presence of Dusanka Misevich and wife of the late Professor Peter Kwong in the audience here. I was tasked with putting together this panel entitled Peter Kwong Memorial, Friend, Scholar, Mentor, and Community Leader. And we have up here a panel of various areas of expertise. And many of them actually fit into different categories, or multiple categories as well. Students, colleagues, peers, as well as friends. Before each of them shares with us how they met Peter, as well as some of how he has touched them in terms of their research, their work, and also some of the things they share together intimately, perhaps, to share with the audience here. So I'll begin first. Peter Kwong is actually a board member of ARE, one of the founding members. And when I started at the Asian American Asian Research Institute, back in spring 2002, I actually took his class at Hunter College, an undergraduate student, so Hunter. his class was Intro to Chinese American History. Now, at that time, I wasn't that close with him, actually, at all. But in terms of what I learned in his class, the labor that the Chinese Americans and the history that they experienced in this country, the coolies, and also Chinese labor politics in Chinatown itself through his books, which all the students were actually asked to purchase to learn that class. But I actually learned a lot. And interestingly enough, we're at the ARE Annual Conference here today. And back in 2002, when we had our first ARE Annual Conference, I was busy doing logistics, filming, etc. And I was actually supposed to hand in my paper for Professor Kwong's class. Right? I thought I had enough time to actually get to his class in time, and then a friend of mine called me and said, "Hey, where are you? The professor already came. All he did was come, take the paper, and leave." And then by that time I was all worried what was I gonna do, right? I hand in my paper. And I actually, at that time, was still early internet, I actually looked up the white pages and found Professor Kwong's phone number in the phone book. And then I actually called the phone number, left messages, and his wife actually picked up. And I said, "Is this Peter Kwong's home? Is the Professor Peter Kwong?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Could you leave a message? I'm a student of his. I was at a conference today working. He's a board member of the Asian Research Institute. I hope I can actually hand in my paper to him later on in the day." And she said, "I'll relay the message to him." And later on, I actually did get to hand in my paper to his teaching assistant at that time. And then I got a B+ in his class. So. But in terms of, it's roughly already 2 months since Professor Kwong has passed away. And before he did pass away, I actually had lunch with him. And at that time, he just fixed his iPhone. And for many months, since late fall, when he had a mapping of Asian Americans in New York seminar at the Roosevelt House at Hunter College, his iPhone was cracked. He asked me for my advice on where to get it fixed, and I told him, "Go to Apple Store." He said, "No, it must be better in Chinatown. They have these deals in Chinatown. Why not Chinatown?" I said, "Well, you know, you don't know about their quality, but if you want to do it in Chinatown, that's fine as well." And back in March, a couple of weeks before he passed, we had lunch, and I actually brought him a screen protector to put on his newly fixed iPhone, which he got fixed at the Apple Store, not Chinatown, because he didn't walk over to Chinatown. And also, the protector for the back too. And then we had lunch at Evergreen, nearby the main library on 42nd Street. And we were actually supposed to, a couple weeks later, come to Professor Eric Tang's talk at the CUNY Graduate Center to listen. But unfortunately, he was unable to be here with us. So, just a few things about what ARE is doing in order to remember Professor Kwong. In our next upcoming issue of CUNY Forum Volume 5, also titled Choosing Asian America and a CUNY Forum Anthology, we're going to be featuring a special section to Professor Huang called Passages, with a poem at the bottom by Russell C. Leung, our editor, veteran editor of the Amerasia Journal from UCLA, and also past CUNY Thomas Tan visiting professor at here. So we'll be featuring three of his past essays that he's done for CUNY Forum. The first, when he met the Dalai Lama. This is actually the first time that he met the Dalai Lama. And then it's called My Journey to Spirituality. So according to Professor Leung, not only is Peter very academic and knowledgeable of the Chinatown history, but he also became very spiritual after meeting His Holiness. So you can read that essay. Also, we have an essay called Tales from the Field, where Professor Chin and some other professors, Terry Hong, Margaret Chin, and Zai Liang, came together in order to discuss how they got involved in academics. So that's featured. And finally, there's a chapter on Peter Liang and race relations. Afterwards, what happened? How can Chinese American communities, Chinese communities, and African American communities communicate with each other in order to not hold hostilities with each other, but work together in order to amend injustices to both our communities? So we'll be featuring that. And also, if you're interested in knowing about some of Professor Huang's past work, while combing through our website, we actually found that he did or was involved with 18 different talks at the Asian American Asian Research Institute, and also co-sponsored events with the Mapping of Asian Americans in New York seminar at Hunter College. So you have that. And instead of combing through just this Word document, we actually put together this playlist available for you. So if you actually visit our website, YouTube page, all 18 talks are available here. We've collected them together. So anytime you want to listen to Peter, you know, criticize people about Chinatown, politics, etc., he's there for you. So with that, I'll start on my left side over here. Professor Chin, maybe you want to begin first?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Trishika. Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for the kind words about Peter. And also for your support of him in Asian American Studies at Hunter College. Also, thank you so much for giving us a comprehensive view of what his work was, because then I can focus on my personal experiences with him. So Peter Huang was my mentor, my colleague at Hunter College for the last 10 years, and my friend. I first met Peter in person in the spring semester of 1994, I was in the second year of my doctoral program at Columbia when I discovered a course he was teaching at the CUNY Graduate Center with Ida Susser on immigrant communities, a course where I also met Professor Ken Guest, who was a fellow grad student at the time. I was excited about the course because I had encountered Peter's work 7 years earlier when I was in college, when I read his book, The New Chinatown. So by the time I met Peter, he had already loomed large in my imagination. He's been on my mind for 30 years, and I'll miss him greatly. Peter's book was part of my intellectual and political awakening in college. I was at Cornell University, and we were struggling to get our Asian American Studies program started. Because we had so few Asian American Studies courses, I did an independent study with Professor Lee C. Lee, who founded the Asian American Studies program there. My project focused on anti-Asian violence, and even as a young scholar, I was really struck by how different Peter's work was. His work looked inside of Chinatown, and rather than treating the community as a monolithic group with everyone having aligned interests, he broke it apart, showing how some Chinese workers were being exploited by their own co-ethnic people, sometimes with the threat of violence as one of the tactics for keeping workers in line. I dug up some old letters I had written to him in the late 1990s after I'd taken his course, asking for recommendation letters, asking him to review a draft of my dissertation proposal. The tone was really formal and respectful. I didn't know him well, and I was intimidated by him, which is something that I've never really shaken in all the time I've known him. And even as I got to know his extremely kind and generous sides over the years, Peter helped me get my start as an academic. When I did a research project on the Vietnamese Chinese community in Manhattan's Chinatown, he used his social capital on my behalf to introduce me in person to community leaders. Sitting patiently with me when I conducted my first interview for the project, helping to smooth the interaction. He gave me my first teaching job, teaching the course Asians in the U.S. as an adjunct at Hunter College in 1995 when he was director of the Asian American Studies program. And when I joined the full-time faculty at Hunter in 2007, he befriended my three research staff and even hosted them at his house upstate. There's story after story about Peter's generosity and kindness. After becoming his colleague, I continued to learn from Peter's unique point of view and his vast experience. Peter's contributions to a discussion were sometimes like being struck with a Zen master's stick. Parsimonious, sudden, and illuminating. Peter was involved in so many research and community projects, as Vita pointed out. It was easy not to know many of them. During his memorial service last week at Hunter College, some people mentioned how they had at some point in knowing Peter had discovered something he had worked on that they had no idea about. And I had that same experience. When I started my study of Asian immigrant women working in sexually oriented massage parlors, I told Peter about it and was surprised to learn that he had studied the issue at least a decade before. He shared with me a video segment from a major network investigative news show where he went undercover posing as a client to a suburban home that housed a secret brothel. The door was answered by what seemed to be a guard, and Peter passed through with a hidden video camera in a gym bag, and he captured a very moving interview with one of the Asian immigrant women working there. He put himself in a considerable amount of danger alone in this isolated house, in a room conversing with a woman, using a hidden camera while the guard waited outside. In more recent years, I had the pleasure of working with Peter to help start a faculty seminar, part of Peter's vision to develop an intellectual community of scholars studying Asian American issues. Many of our members were at his memorial service, including Ken, and it was clear that Peter had succeeded in building that community. That's something he left us to help carry on now that he's gone. I admire Peter. I've learned so much from him, and I've benefited from his intelligence, courage, and generosity. Thank you, Peter, for being my mentor, colleague, and friend, and a teacher to all of us. Thank you.
I suppose when we were in graduate school, we all look around to see if we can find a role model, someone to build or model our career and scholarship after. I remember taking a close look at Peter to see if he was the one. As we all know, Peter was a complex man and not so easy to decipher. But here are some of my personal reflections on the 23 years I've known and worked with him.
Deep gratitude and admiration for this scholar activist who became my teacher and my mentor and an accomplice at times and a friend. I was lucky enough with John my first semester in grad school, which I think was actually in the fall of 94, to take a course co-taught with Peter and Ida Susser, New Yorkers in Global Perspective. The experience changed my life and set the direction for my career as Peter introduced me to Fujianese immigrants, uptown and downtown class divisions, and the power of community organizing in immigrant communities. Ida and Peter made us do field work during that semester. I had studied Mandarin at Columbia and at Beijing University. I lived in Hong Kong. I was interested in religion. So I was pondering about how to build on those experiences, but my proposals for fieldwork were all over the place. In Peter's inimitable fashion, he was painfully direct and honest in his opinions. Ken, the new mosque at 96th Street and 3rd Avenue seems interesting. Peter, a waste of time, not significant for new immigrants and controlled by the wealthy. Ken, Tiananmen Square protesters, including some of my friends, escaping to the U.S. after 1989. Peter, flashes in the pan. The people are not willing to do the hard work for democracy and change in China. They just want to get rich now. Ken, Fujianese immigrant religious communities? Peter, that's your project. In fact, it should be your dissertation and your book. Hurry, before somebody else gets it. I'll work, and he promised to work with me through the whole process. I mean, who gets that in their first semester of grad school? Somebody to really see you that clearly and see the world that clearly and make that connection. Peter was true to his word. We did independent studies. We had tea and lunch in Chinatown. He gave me field work tips all the time. Follow the money. He wrote recommendation letters. He took my students in my first class that I taught at Hunter on a walking tour of Chinatown. We co-authored an article together critiquing Porte's ethnic enclave theory. I even was inspired into my own writing process by calling Dushka one night and saying, can I speak to Peter? And she said, no, he's at the cafe writing. I was like, oh, that's great. I still write at a diner. Of course, Peter, as you might expect, was an exacting mentor. At my dissertation first draft meeting, I thought I was basically done writing. But about 10 minutes into the three-hour meeting, he said, Ken, listen, stop talking. There's nothing to argue about here. Your draft really is not as strong as you think it is. He was right, of course. Infuriating, tough to hear, but right. After the meeting, I found he had left my dissertation draft behind on the table. But as I looked at it, I realized that he had taken the three core chapters on religion. Then I knew I was doing something unique and potentially important. In grad school, he and I tried to bridge the teacher-student divide with decidedly mixed results. Lunch and tea in Chinatown, playing tennis. We'd even gone sailing together. Including one ill-fated stormy day on Shelter Island, and Dushka was there, when I managed to lose Peter off the back of my 15-foot Boston whaler in a sudden gust of wind. Of course, Peter had been determined to take the tiller against my better judgment. I was the captain, but of course he was my teacher, and filial piety and respect and all that. But as I hauled him back in, drenched and spluttering in the bottom of my sailboat, I was sure that in that instant, my academic career had come to a cataclysmic end. Peter did not disabuse me of that idea either at the time. After I graduated and landed my job at Baruch, we didn't see much of each other for a few years. I guess I needed my space to grow, and we were both very busy. And then one day in 2010, he called me up and asked if I would write a letter for his nomination to be Distinguished CUNY Professor. It seemed he needed me, his student. I'm so pleased to have been able to write that letter and express my gratitude and admiration. Over the years, Peter, my teacher and mentor, also became accomplice and friend. He recruited me to join him and two lawyers to develop a training program for housing lawyers, city officials, and housing court judges on Chinese family and economic practices that are affecting the way Chinese are treated in New York City housing courts. Recently, we met with the borough president, Gail Brewer, to discuss the stalled Chinatown Working Group proposals for rezoning Chinatown and resisting extreme real estate development pressures. We've both been writing family memoirs, a realization that came out of a meeting one day of our Mapping Asian American New York Research Seminar a couple of years ago. It was a rainy day, not many of us there, and we sort of went off topic, and we realized many of us were interested in the same thing, and we were both writing these memoirs. Since then, I've treasured our conversations about archives and literary agents, family secrets, and the search for hidden meaning in our family stories. We'd often walk home after those meetings across Central Park and talk about Chinatown, politics, community organizing, CUNY, family, memoirs, and spiritual journeys. Early on, Peter and I started having some conversations, which I guess I never would have expected from him in our classroom encounters, around religion and spirituality. We both grew up in Methodist churches, though he in Taiwan and I in Florida. We both sang in church choirs growing up. We both had deeply committed church mothers, though mine was a progressive feminist and his was quite conservative. He left the church and I've stayed. I've watched his growing connection to the Dalai Lama in recent years with great interest. I watched him put on his Tibetan prayer beads, and I know they gave him great peace, even in the end. We both at times met the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala. What was he seeking after all those years? Anthony mentioned a a piece that Peter wrote, and I just want to quote a little bit of it here at the end. When I first encountered his holiness, Peter says, I thought my attraction to him was because I had grown older and more philosophical, thus more receptive to his teachings. But I have since come to see my interest in him as a reflection of my desire to rediscover my Eastern origins buried under Western education. Moreover, I desire to integrate my two backgrounds into an effective balance. My exposure to His Holiness's wisdom has so far been limited to His secular teachings. I have not become religious, and I'm certainly not interested in joining any form of organized religion. But there are no boundaries between scientific, philosophical, spiritual, and religious understanding at this point. While not religiously inclined, I am ready for a journey of spiritual discovery. Fascinating. I really miss Peter. I miss talking to him. I miss being able to call him up. I miss knowing that he was there and he would always correct my mistakes. He'd always be the go-to guy on Chinatown and Chinese immigration, that he'd always step into the breach at the crucial moment. Peter was so vital and so vibrant, so dynamic and passionate. I thought we had many more years of friendship and collaboration and walks and conversations and spiritual journeys ahead of us.
至终亲爱的师父、老师、同工、朋友，一路平安。
Farewell, Peter Kwong. You have placed your mark upon us. We continue the journey.
My name is Karen So, and I'm here to represent HomeQuest Community Services. Just by way of introduction, HomeQuest Community Services is a multi-social service agency located in South Brooklyn. We have two community centers focused largely on the older adult population, working with seniors, immigrants, and the otherwise disadvantaged. I'm really pleased to be here today to talk about Peter. I met Peter Kwong through Corky Lee, who is
a ubiquitous photographer, APA photographer in our community. And Peter and Corky go back to the Asian American Movement days, to Basement Workshop, to Food Co-op. I learned so much just having them both in the same room, the history of Chinatown. And so we would periodically meet up in coffee houses in Chinatown. And of course, the conversation would always inevitably go back to Chinatown. It would always be about the people. Gentrification was a big concern for Peter Kwong. He believed that Chinatown was a gateway for immigrants, and he was concerned about the changes that was happening in the community. And we often talk about that, what would happen if this community got priced out, if they had no place to go. So he really cared about the underdog, the people that didn't speak English, had very limited English proficiency, the people that really needed support. So in 2015, I joined HomeQuest Community Services as their executive director. And as I was going through our files in our cabinet, archived in one of the files was a need assessment study. And I was so excited when I saw it because I saw Hunter College, Peter Kwong. And I said, wow, Peter Kwong, what's this file doing here? And it was very exciting, so I flipped through it he actually had students, undergrad students, come and do an assessment study in our community. And I traced this back to our former executive director, Richard Kuhl, who at the time had reached out to Peter. They had talked quite a bit about the community that we're in, which is South Brooklyn. It has a growing Chinese American community. And Peter was actually very fascinated by this because of the fact that we were one of the first Asian-led organizations to serve Asians in that community at that time. There were a lot of barriers, just barriers of entry, just to serve this community. So he was very fascinated by this. And he wanted to find out more about how the Chinese, why did the Chinese settle in Brooklyn? And in South Brooklyn, of all places. So this need assessment helped to answer that question. They delved into a lot of the history of the Chinese migration into Brooklyn. And mainly what they found was that the Chinese moved to these particular neighborhoods because of the train lines, which brought them back to Chinatown for work, for shopping, to see their doctors. So the trains were very important in these neighborhoods, and that's part of the reason why the Chinese formed. The other aspect of the study was looking at what are the characteristics, what are the demographics of this community, and what they found was that it's largely Asian immigrants, older adults, and what were their needs? They needed social service. And at that time in the 90s, a lot of our social services for the Asian community were centralized in Chinatown, in Manhattan. So a lot of older immigrants were traveling, commuting back and forth to access services. And that became a huge barrier, particularly if they are caretakers, if they're caring for grandchildren, and they have to go pick up their kids, you know, after 3 p.m. Sometimes they did not get services altogether because they didn't have the time. So Peter's study was really very important in looking at this particular population and the needs. We're very grateful for the work that Hunter College, Peter Kwong, Professor Kwong, and the graduate students did in getting this assessment study. And though we can't really measure the results of whether the study had an impact on our center getting funded for the first time, what we can say is that it was very important in creating awareness and in our advocacy for the city to recognize the growing demand for senior services, for immigration services in South Brooklyn. And so we're so grateful for all the work that Peter's done. The last time I reached out to Peter was in an email, and that was Thanksgiving. And I sent out emails to friends just wishing them a happy Thanksgiving. And I had a nice reply back, very short, thank you so much. No. So I never dreamed that I would get to talk to Peter again, or but I recognize now that we have to value our time and make time for our family and friends. It's very important, and we will always miss our dear friend Peter Kwong.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Tommy Wu, and I'm a graduate student here at Graduate Center, and I'm also a graduate student of Peter Kwong. Well, thank you, Ari, for organizing this important conference on Asian American coalition building, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about Peter Kwong. I just want to talk briefly about my relationship to Peter. My family moved to the U.S. in 1986 from Guangdong, China. My dad worked odd jobs, and my mom started as a seamstress in garment factories. We lived in Brooklyn, but I went to elementary school in Chinatown. Starting in 1990, Chinatown was undergoing intense social change, including the rise and fall of gangs, large-scale demographic change, and the closings of many garment factories. I, of course, couldn't make sense of these larger social changes until much later on in my life. After college, I began to take interest in history and started devouring books on the Chinese-American experience. I remember reading Peter's Forbidden Workers for the first time. It was the first history book that made me emotional. The book read like a meticulous researcher, tracing the bends of history, detailing the who, what, when, and how we got here. But never lost in the details is his voice beseeching the reader to learn, to reflect, and ultimately to act. I began to attend Peter's book talks and saw him in different community events, but I could never muster the courage to approach him. He was intimidating, mostly because he had this aura of no-nonsense to him. Peter wasn't fond of small talks, and he never shied away from saying what was difficult to hear. He openly criticized politicians, college administrators, and even community activists because the struggle was more important to him than political correctness. When I was deciding to pursue doctoral studies 8 years ago, I reached out to Peter to tell him about my anxieties. Our first meeting started exactly what I feared the most. His first words were, "Tommy, what can I do for you?" Over the next hour, the mood became more pleasant, and he patiently listened to my story. Sensing my anxieties, he finally smiled and said, "Go if you have something to say." Those words have stuck with me. Fast forward to last year when Peter and I met for dim sum at Jin Feng, a Chinatown restaurant that now employs a unionized staff after many hard-fought worker struggles, many of which he wrote about and participated in. We were supposed to talk about the progress of my research, but we ended up talking about his personal life. He became very reflective, and he recounted how he came to the decision to pursue doctoral studies. As it turned out, his story was not very different from mine. An engineer who was lost, but found his calling in the struggles of others. As his graduate student, I have learned Peter's no-nonsense demeanor belies his love for workers, communities, and those who have been wronged. Peter's deeply political, but he's existentially moral. I love you, Dr. Kwong. Thank you.
With that, that's the conclusion of our conference. I'd like to thank all our panelists here today to share their heartfelt moments and experiences with Professor Peter Kwong. And if you missed any of the conference at all, don't worry, check our website next week. You can view all the different panels again and use it for your research, we hope. And you can also visit our YouTube page in order to view past talks by Professor Peter Kwong as well.
Thank you, Anthony, and thank you so much for sharing your memories with us. I met Peter probably 35 years ago, and when he was quite a young man, and Fishko was quite a young woman, and I was his attorney. And he wasn't a bad client. he listened to advice, and he had some good strategic moves of his own. But thank you so much for joining us today and for staying for this tribute to Peter in particular. For you young folks who had the question of, what do I do with my life? Where do I go from here? Peter Kwong stands as an outstanding role model for you. Thanks again, and good night.